Good morning, colleagues. I'm going to ask us to settle so that we can start our meeting. Welcome, everybody. Colleagues, we are going to start with our process calling from last week, Tuesday. But I think for me, I'm going to welcome the University of Cape Town students who are here with us. I met them when I was invited to be in a panel discussion at UCT. We were political parties who were there debating the state of the nation address. And I offered them to come to the Bomidjan experience, how we do our work as parliamentarians, so they can have a better understanding of parliament and parliamentarians, not only what they see on TV. Because most of the time, our committee work don't get exposed to the public. So you have, we may have asked them to send so that you can say, look at our future leaders, so tomorrow I'm hoping there will be big DGs and presence of form and committee chairpersons and members. Welcome and hope you enjoy your day today. Welcome everybody. We have three entities that we're going to deal with, and I hope to get documents and all the presentations in time. There was an amended presentation from Broadband Infraco. I hope members received it as well in time before the meeting. We have a program that we are meant to start with. We were meant to start at 9, and my apologies, colleagues. We are starting 20 minutes late. I always want to start on time. So we apologize for that. In terms of our program, we'll give the Deputy Minister an opportunity, and I'll go through the apologies. We'll give the Deputy Minister an opportunity to make remarks, and then we'll move straight into Broadband Infraco. Presentation will be led by the Chairperson and the CEO, and then we'll get into discussion, have a tea break, then discussion. We'll see how it goes, colleagues. But we need, by lunchtime, have concluded even the discussions, and I think we made something. We will have presentation by Centrec as well in the morning, prior to lunch, and then pick up that discussion out immediately after lunch, and then proceed to briefing by CETA. My expectation is that board chairperson's notes is compulsory for attendance, and the CEO happy. We'll deal with the issue of the board chairperson of CETA when we come to the afternoon. And then that's how the day is expected to do, and then we'll do questions and discussion. Expectation is that by 6 o'clock we'll be done later. We might be able to finish early, but later is 6 o'clock. We managed to keep the time at the last meeting. We finished exactly at 6, and I'm hoping eventually we'll do the same. Apologies that I have received. Minister Tswale has apologized. We were with him last week for the whole day. He sat with us. Today he's got agenda items that are before a cabinet cluster. We have understood his apology and accepted it, and I hope members of the committee will accept. We've got an appeal from Honorable Aino. Ains, I think Comrade Project is going to have to assist me with the ANC's membership. I noticed we have received the changes to the membership, but it hasn't been 80 seats. So we are going to request that it be 80 seats so that their apologies and the changes are reflected. Because Honorable Cornelius apologized that he's not yet on the ATC. And Honorable Mavi, because he knows his Gumi, he's not submitted an apology because he knows that he has been changed from the Gumi. And Honorable Mofilo has apologized. So I'm just going to request that you assist us to manage that so that our reflection, so that members are not reflected as absent, whereas they have been moved out of the committee. So that is what I'm going to request to that it is with later. But I've read the apologies, honorable members. Jim, without wasting time, can I give over to you to lead us in the discussion?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Chairpersons and CEOs of our SOEs, the DG, ladies and gentlemen. And indeed, the Minister has apologized, given urgent cabinet commitments. Chairperson, if you may just allow me, it's important to really take advantage also of this platform to express our unhappiness about what is going on in the country, the attack of immigrants in different communities, and government has taken a clear position in terms of saying whatever is going on, the attacks of people on grounds that they are not South African citizens is against our constitution, is illegal, and it will be met with the strong hands of the law to ensure that it doesn't happen again. We've all been asked to go out to different communities as public representatives to express our solidarity with the victims, but also to send a clear and unambiguous messages to communities that whatever, whoever plans to attack people on grounds that they are not South Africans, they are committing crimes against humanity. So coming back to this meeting, which I think follows from what we did last week, as part of the ongoing budget process, we present to you the strategic plans of FinTech, Broadband Infraco, and CETA. As you are aware, honorable members, Broadband Infraco and CETA were transferred from the Ministries of Public Enterprise and Public Service and Administration, respectively, to the newly established Ministry of Telecoms and Postal Services last year. This was done as part of the broader process of realignment of state departments by the presidency in order to improve performance in general and specifically to position our sector to play its rightful role in supporting the radical transformation that our government wants to see, specifically to support the economic transformation agenda. The State Information Technology Agency, having been established as a government IT procurement arm in the 90s, grew over time to become a large entity with a plethora of objectives. It is the aim of our government to streamline and reposition CETA into lean and agile entity whose mandate is focused on three-pronged mandate, which is to lead implementation of e-governance, secure state information, and to continue to procure IT on behalf of government. The CETA strategy that being presented to the Portfolio Committee on Telecommunications and Postal Services should speak to this mandate. We are earnestly committed to the improvement of the capacity of government to deliver on this mandate. And to that effect, we view e-government as an important tool to achieve this objective. We are also committed to ensuring that the information of the state is secure. However, again, honorable members, with regards to the broadband in Fraco, we acknowledge that this entity was established with the sole purpose of implementing broadband and has over time and in line with this object developed important capabilities to implement broadband projects. As you are aware, as a country, we have in 2013 adopted South Africa Connect, the country's broadband policy, in line with the pronouncement by the President during his State of the Nation address. We are now rolling up our sleeves in preparation for the implementation of the first phase of South Africa Connect. As articulated in South Africa Connect,
We need to prepare and coordinate our efforts in order to ensure that all the available capabilities and competences are harnessed to implement this policy. In government with several other entities that have capabilities and competences to implement broadband programs. To this end, we have adopted as part of the South Africa Connect a program of SOC rationalization. This is an endeavor to do away with duplication and to improve efficiencies and our effectiveness in implementing our broadband policy. It is in pursuit of this and towards implementation of SOC rationalization that we instructed the broadband infraco to build its strategy around the efforts to preserve its value within the context of endeavoring to rationalize our SOCs. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, the program of rationalizing SOEs is not only informed by the needs to ensure that resources of the state are efficiently and effectively utilized, but is also informed by the findings of the Presidential Review Committee on State-Owned Enterprises. Among the findings of the Presidential Review Committee was that there's so much duplication and inefficient use of state resources in the SOC sector. It was also found that of the approximately 700 SOEs, some do not even have a clear mandate. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, we also have the pleasure to present to you the strategic plan of CENTEC, one of our state-owned companies that has played a very critical role towards ensuring that the infrastructure required for the country to move towards digital television is in place. To date, CENTEC has ensured that the country is fully covered in terms of its ability to receive digital signals. As an infrastructure company, CENTEC also possesses capabilities to implement broadband and has, with its possession, strategic assets that may be deployed towards the priorities of our department. As we present the CENTEC strategic plan, I wish to acknowledge the presence in our midst of a familiar face among us, Dr. Sidumo Mhapi, under whose leadership CENTEC achieved the full rollout of digital broadcasting infrastructure and generally stabilized the entity. He has now moved on and has taken up a position as the CEO of CETA, and we expect the same in CETA to raise the bar, address all of the ongoing challenges. I also like to acknowledge our leaders of our SOEs present here today and the students from the University of Cape Town and say to them, whatever we do, we need people who can process, analyze, and help us through their reflection so that our policies talk to the development agenda. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dean, for those remarks. I'm going to allow the Chairperson of the Board of BBI, Mr. Mbolo, and then your team will follow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I recognize the Deputy Minister, the DG, honorable members and the students. The team we brought here for broadband comprised the CEO, the acting Chief Financial Officer, and the Executive Projects Planning, Shen. And I'm told about the exact HR, my apologies. Having heard the Deputy Minister briefly deal with the broadband issues in the country, we are not here to gainsay what policy should be followed. However, we, at a high level, Madam Chair, wish to point out that the policy and the objectives of South Africa Connect, we subscribe to them. However, the problems we experience as a board are really legislative in nature and uncertainty around it, policy uncertainty also. It seems to take quite a long time for issues to be resolved. we are currently seized with a situation where within the next 5 to 6 months, the company will be in a precarious position, and I think that is a matter that I ask that it be attended to. It's unfortunate that we have reached a stage where we really, really teetering on the brink. Matter has been brought to the attention of the shareholders, but if one accepts that there is an attempt to rationalize SOCs, one also assesses that hiatus is brought about by those type of uncertainties. The CEO will largely deal with what amendments there were in the presentation. As I understand them, they deal with SOC infrastructure ownership and also to a large extent objectives and aims of the APP insofar as ensuring business sustainability is concerned. As a board, we have set out to amend certain objectives in view of the financial precariousness of the company. And with those short words, I will give over to the CEO to deal with issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair of the Committee, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members of the Committee, Director General and colleagues. I think that the Deputy Minister has alluded to some of the changes, that amendments that we have made to our presentation. We start our presentation by referring to the relevance of broadband infraco and what it intends to achieve, looking at the medium strategic framework objective. That objective number 6 is a critical objective for us. Whilst we do not necessarily provide last mile, it does assist to ensure that the broadband is brought closer to education institutions and health facilities, as it talks to outcome 1 and 2. From an outcome 4 and 5 point of view, we continue to have intense, but from a supplier development, black economic empowerment, there are strategies within the company that ensure that we address those specific policies. Of course, our efforts also to be impacting on broadband access in megabits per second, improvement thereof, because as and when we increase capacity of our infrastructure, we are addressing it. With regards to the ranking, our efforts do talk to the ranking, even though we've gone 5 steps backwards in the new ranking. I think it becomes important that we separate the legislative space as well as infrastructure. On this specific slide, I have looked at the infrastructure, the ICT value chain, and have deliberately looked at entities that that government has got an interest in. Yes, Vodacom is one of them, but it's not included in here. So if one looks at that, we'll see that there is a lot of ICT infrastructure, even in non-ICT stocks. But if we look at what infrastructure CETA has, it's data centers. If we look at what infrastructure ICASA has, it procures those specific services. So when one looks at the infrastructure, there isn't necessarily on the ICT stocks generally a duplication. Yes, Sentech does have a satellite, yes, Sentech does have the spectrum to be utilized for the rollout of broadband. But at the core of what the companies have, it's important that even in policy direction, these would have to be considered. The non-ICT SOCs are not necessarily following the licensing conditions. Thus, it becomes important again that there's clarity in terms of the role that they play. With regards to Transnet and Eskom, as per the Broadband Infraco Act, we do utilize those services and have been engagement with them on how best can we ensure that we avail the infrastructure to other players equitably so that we have a positive impact on the cost to connect, rather than have a situation where those facilities are taken up by the highest bidder. With regards to where we actually do pay, it's our interpretation of From a broadband infrastructure point of view, we roll out infrastructure, we measure it in kilometers of fiber and the POPs, which are open access POPs to allow third parties to connect. And if you look at CETA and USADA, I think previously when we've come here at NTT, we have talked about USADA and the connectivity of schools, CETA to the Deputy Minister's point is about e-governance security thereof. Thus, if we look at what the companies really do, there isn't a confusion. But then there is a challenge when one starts looking at the legislative framework. The fact that the entities all have ECS, ECNS licenses for broadband infraco implies that they also have the same mandate that is incurred on them by that. Okay, so if we look at the Center Act and the amendments that have come over time, there's been an expansion from just pure signal distribution to go into the terrain of telecommunication services. If you look at the CETA Act, it talks about telecommunications, but specifically for the use of government, to what the Deputy Minister has said. When it comes to USASA specifically, we then have a new addition that comes out of the policy that indicates that various options for construction, operation, and maintenance of networks in underserved areas will be developed by USASA and implemented in cooperation with other stakeholders, which is a bit different from the Section 90 that stated that the agency must provide incentives to the telecommunications network service licensees to construct, operate, and maintain electronic communications network in underserved areas. So it is more of a progression. So to the chairperson's point, I think it becomes quite important for us to have an understanding of these things, because without clarity on this thing, it then becomes a challenge on who should be funded and what they should be funded for, unless we have clarity on who has to play what role and where. We do appreciate their coming across into the department so that there can be those efficiencies, cooperation and coordination of the entities as required as well by the Presidential Review Committee document. So that becomes a very critical challenge, because for National Treasury to move forward and say that we are going to be supporting the entity, there needs to be clarity on which entity is doing what. Because at this stage, all the entities can do that which is in the mandate of broadband infrastructure. From that background and moving straight into the our presentation, is that the company for 5 years had Nortel as a major customer. That customer, the contract ended in 2012, and I would like to believe that from an operational point of view, the mandate of our had been given was to ensure that we drive efficiencies within the company, we ensure that everything that is sorted out, and that is, today we have 18 customers that are on the on our network. We've got all of the operators on our network by Telkom, of course. There's improvement of our revenue, and we are working on ensuring that we are able to close the gap pointing to the precarious position that the chair alluded to in terms of ensuring that the efficiencies and the revenues that we generate address that. But what's mostly important for us is that our mandate is to ensure that we allow for access of broadband by underserved areas. So whilst we look at the financial sustainability issues of the company, we have continued to ensure that we have kilometers of fibers are expanded. Yes, we have actually reduced the number of hubs, but that's all about driving efficiencies. I think the last time we presented at the end of the last period, we had said we had 156 hubs. As we drive efficiencies, we are moving things around on our network and have reduced from that 158 to now 156. So that's the operational mandate. The chair talked about the change of the annual performance of plan of the company, because the board felt it important that we change the objective. Not change the objectives, but rather the indicators to begin to address the key issues that were in the organization. So within the corporate plan, we have a cash reserve of 100 million rands that is required, but in here the board has requested that we put in financial cost efficiencies measures that talk to
Yes, and increasing the gross margin and overhead cost efficiencies. Those are the two new indicators. And noting that the MTEF, there was nothing that came through that MTEF, the EBITDA improvement will be a year-on-year improvement rather than focusing on budgets that wouldn't be, that monies that are not necessarily available. With regards to expansion of our network infrastructure, it is mainly to ensure that we deliver for the customers that we have on our network. Delivery of the customers also addresses issues of availability of access through various areas of the institution. So again, on the network improvement, the Ramasababa network upgrade and the Onsiepkans network upgrade have been added as opposed to what was there in the corporate plan that was submitted to the committee. The training spend has been brought in line with legislation, and whilst there's still very tight procurement, there are projects that have spilled over into this year. We had the number of indirect jobs created at 10, and the board felt that was too small a number considering that there's a spillover of projects, and that number has been increased to 60 jobs. The other issue was on our corporate social investment in terms of our move to support math and science. We had put in there the issue of tablets, but again, given our financial situation, our key focus is to ensure that we go and source sponsorship to be able to provide those specific things to the entities. I now hand over to Capital Project Executive.
Thank you very much. Good morning to the Chair of the Committee, the Deputy Minister, the members of the Committee, the DGs, DDGs, and all colleagues. I'm going to quickly take you through the capital projects portion of the program, of our capital plan, corporate plan, sorry. And you'll see that we have two major projects that are run currently in broadband InfraCo, and this was a drive to get new anchor clients onto the network. Previously we had Airtel as an anchor client. Now we have two other anchor clients, the one anchor client being SIDA, and the third anchor client is listed as well. We show in the slide the type of endeavors that are being carried out in broadband InfraCo to provide these services to these anchor clients. They generally run over a 2-year to 3-year period for migration period of these services. And whenever we have to do these type of projects, we actually have to extend the fiber to the client, and we have to increase our presence at the customer premises as well. So we have to basically put a presence in place for CETA in a number of locations, and we have to extend our fiber network to reach those locations. Because the build takes a little while, we normally have a migration plan and we migrate slowly onto the services. We agree to these migration plans with the customers as well. So what you see in front of you is the migration plan that has been agreed and necessitates the building of the fiber, like it's indicated on the slide, and the building of new POPs as well for them. The capital project infrastructure renewal projects, we have a number of projects that are indicated in the plan as well. The mic, sorry. Okay, sorry. Okay, so basically, the next slide is showing the connectivity diversity that is required and the type of kilometers of fiber routes that would be required to be built, the critical sections of the network that need to be addressed, where we need to build diverse routes to ensure the resilience of the network. The following section is a network refurbishment. Here we address legacy issues and replace the rest of the obsolete equipment that's on our network. We've managed to do a large portion of that. There's still 44% of the network that still needs to be addressed. We have vulnerable links refurbishment, and we have certain routes that we would like to bolster, to put resilience on. We have an IP network evolution, which is part of our license obligations. We have an overlay network for protection, which is a network that we put in place just to protect our services so that we have alternate routes for our services. We have Airtel independence issues where we're trying to move out of POPs where Airtel has the ownership or the use of POPs, and they restrict the use of any other providers coming in, and they don't allow third-party connections to take place at those POPs. So because of the restrictive nature of the parameters in which we have to operate in these POPs, we've decided to put open access ports in various locations where we allow any third parties to connect, and we can connect our services to our end clients like Cedar and etc. We have an AirGlash issue where we have a replacement of old AirGlash fiber network. We expect that to be addressed going into the future. We have all of these projects indicated in the plan. I wish to note that I wish to make the point that not all of these projects can be implemented because they are dependent on funding. So based on the funding that is received by Broadband Info, by a debt or whatever means, we then will implement these projects. This is just giving you an indication of what's in the plan and what can be implemented as soon as funding has been arranged for these projects. The projects that on the next slide that I want to draw attention to are the projects at the top, which are the commercial projects, the first three lines. The majority of those projects we are self-funding, so we have enough cash flows to take care of those projects. And we are looking for funding for the rest of the projects. We have initiatives on the funding arena that will be indicated to you by our CFO just now. But just to note that we are even doing development institutions, etc. We engaging them for funding, and we engaging the private sector as well. To give you an indication of the history, and I think this is important to understand. If you look at this line, what we're trying to indicate is that when we started in 2008 and it goes on to 2014, you find that the funding initiatives that were in place at the time were equity injections from the shareholders, which is the DBE at the time and IDC. You see that we had tranches that came in 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2011. For 2012, 2013, and 2014, we basically had unsuccessful MTF applications and we operated only within our cash flows. The shareholder funds that came in is indicated on the next line, and it shows the magnitude of the tranches that we received. And how the shareholder funds were spent, if you look at the next three lines, they indicate exactly how the CapEx was invested. We invested in the national network, as shown on the slide. We also invested in the WACS investment, which is the international connectivity that Broadband Infraco has on the West Coast of Africa. It shows exactly how we invested the funds into that project as well. And we indicated on the next line the capacity used by initial customer, which is the first or the only customer that Broadband Infraco had at the time, which was Netel. And we show the services that were used by Netel around 2010, it was 141 services, 2011 about 158 services, and 2012 about 184 services. Next line with the red markings on it is the number of customers that Broadband Infraco had, and you can see that for the first 3 to 4 years we had a single customer scenario, and we've slowly developed that into 2014 being 15 customers on the network. And I understand it's now 16 this year. So we've improved that situation drastically to a point where the customers that were added on were just not any normal customers, but two major anchor customers that came on as well. So it was a substantial improvement in the customer base of Broadband Infraco over the period indicated on the slide. Now
over to
CFO.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, the members, the DGs, Deputy Ministers, and colleagues. Before I give some views on the slide that's been tabled, I'd like to make reference to the base case financials that are on the corporate plan. The tenets of that base case scenario is the current, it's reflective of the current financial position of the business, which talks to our precarious financial position, where we will not be having funds to sustain our financial obligations beyond a certain point. It is critical to note that the business is in a need for a cash injection to be able to meet our current commitments we've made to our clients. And the base case scenario only deals with current commitments made to clients, and it highlights that there will be no revenue growth, because for us to have revenue growth, we do need capital injection to be able to to invest in the refurbishment of our clinics. And failure to get that cash injection will result in no revenue growth for the business, which is not the ideal scenario that we would like to prevent. What's critical from that scenario is the cash injection that is required by the business in a couple of months' time for us to meet our current commitments from our clients. So back on the slide that is being tabled, that's our best case scenario. Our best case scenario is based on the tenets that the business will be able to receive funds to invest in its refurbishment of its network. And just the benefits of refurbishment of the network will be preservation of our assets. You know, the management of the company is putting concerted effort, even on the current base case scenario, to preserve the asset. But for us to be able to preserve the asset sustainably, we need capital injection. And the revenues you're seeing on base case are on premise that once the capital injection is received, we'll be able to refurbish the network and we'll be able to grow our customer base. We currently have 17 clients with 3 anchor clients, and they contribute 80% to our total revenue. The key drivers of our revenue is IRUs and leased circuits. So the terms of IRUs are you receive money up front from clients who have the appetite to invest up front over a long period because of their bandwidth requirements. The benefits of that for business is we've been able to use those funds to, you know, to refurbish some aspects of our network, which has enabled us to continue in our current state as we are. We currently have a strong pipeline that will also be at risk if the cash injection does not come to light. And the huge trajectory from the revenue growth that you're seeing on that slide is underpinned by this whole pipeline, which needs a network upgrade for it to come to light. You'll see that the revenue growth on this slide are based on what is available in the market. The only challenge the business faces would be the capital that's required for us to be able to derive those revenues. On the cost of sale line, we have fixed costs in business. Management, again, is putting concerted effort to make sure those costs do decline every year, view on how we optimize our business model. And you'll see that between 2016 and 2015, we'll be able to break even at an EBITDA level, and thereafter we'll start to be profitable. And your margins will also start to increase accordingly. On the operational side, we have cost containment activities, which are aimed at running a very lean business, and that is reflected in the numbers. Next slide, please. The business has engaged quite extensively on funding initiatives. We have engaged our shareholder. We will be engaging our shareholder again on the application for MPEF, which is critical for the 1.7 billion that's required for the refurbishment capex, which underpins the revenue growth and the profit growth that the business will see in the foreseeable future. And we will be putting that application through in the coming months. We've had major challenges around sourcing funding from commercial banks due to the structure and climate of our balance sheet. Other funding efforts that we've embarked on as a business have been unsuccessful due to guarantees that we required and due to lack of clarity of the role that we will play in the SOC rationalization piece. Commercial banks need a guarantee, and therefore those efforts have been fruitless. Next slide. There are, however, a few other funding initiatives that the chair of the board and management of the company has been embarking on around DBSA, IDC, and AFDB. DBSA is currently looking at the most optimal option for how they'll secure the debt that they're likely to give to business. We will be hearing outcome of that in a couple of months. IDC have also been engaged, and the chairperson will be able to allude and give us an update on an update that he had with the chairperson of the IDC. AFDB, we've also approached them, and they have highlighted the need for a level of support from government. So in summary, from a commercial bank point of view, the funding has been received, and now those are the only 3 other levers that we are depending on for any funding that could come to the business outside of the shareholder. Thank you. I'll hand over to HRE.
Morning, Honorable Chairperson, the DGs in the House and other Honorable Members and the students who have attended the session today, all protocol observed. Before I actually get into the slide, I need to give a bit of background in terms of what has actually prompted us to choose the information that we are presenting to you today. From an HR point of view, normally human resources are a huge cost in the environment, but nonetheless it's a cost that needs very effective control. And when the situation is, as has already been presented by my CEO and my colleagues, as well as the chairperson, you need to take stock and look at where the loopholes could be or where you actually need to tighten further your controls in respect of human capital. And we've taken stock to look back at where we came from and as to whether we can actually justify the growth that we're sitting with in respect of human capital, that it actually can be explained to have been building the required capacity and capability for broadband in FRACO to execute its mandate as expected as per the legislative establishment or founding of broadband in FRACO. And we're looking at a situation where we had a headcount that had been assisted when the ROU getting into the slide now. The ROU with the sole customer that we had was coming to an end. The preparation to raise ourselves to go out there and be able to provide for other prospective business as a commercial entity prompted the company to look at its capacity. It was advised then by very high profile expert external assistance that as at 2011, the company needed 211 heads to do what it was supposed to do given the purpose of its establishment. But nonetheless, if you look at the graph that has been presented, the headcount movement versus customer growth, you'll actually see that since establishment, the headcount has consistently been under the headcount has consistently remained under the headcount that had been approved as the headcount required to match the strategic objectives for every period of time for which planning was being done. And what we also looked at was to see as to whether, in terms of that headcount, there was return for investment or actual optimization in terms of the outputs. And we are actually illustrating that the headcount grew, and as it was growing, commensurate with that, there was a growth of the customer numbers. We could have also illustrated that, as well, there was a national footprint in terms of the infrastructure rollout. There was increased number of points of presence throughout the country as broadband in FRACO was preparing itself to deliver, to execute its mandate. And we're actually showing here that this is as a result of a very clearly calculated way of ensuring that the human resources are optimized and that there is return for the value in terms of the spending human capital. The indications are given at the bottom that there has been 49% growth human resources within the maintenance, sales and marketing environment, and other developments that actually prompted that growth were as a result of the insourcing of the network operating center, which at the time cost the company about 80 million to operate on the basis of an outsourced arrangement, and on bringing it in-house, the estimation was that it would actually be operating at less than 50 million, hence the move in that regard. So as we look at HR, we're also looking at the cost that would be incurred were we to insource all the initiatives on the basis of which we are providing the services that we should be rendering versus if we had our own internal capacity. The main strategic goal for HR is to create an environment of performance excellence through competent and committed employees. And we're here just giving a summary of our strategic plan, which is on a long-term, mid-term, and short-term basis. Here, we strategic objective one, optimization of organizational capacity and capability, has already been alluded to, is about ensuring that we provide or we build a capacity that is sufficient for the execution of the strategic objective plan at the time. And strategic objective number two, a culture of high performance and individual accountability. This is where we illustrate that there is always an effort to ensure that we have an effective integrated talent management strategy that seeks to ensure that the capacity and the capability that has been built in human resources is developed further to ensure that there is a career pathing, there is succession planning, and there is performance at the start levels to mitigate the risks of continuing business, ending business effectively. Strategic objective number three, which is a competitive reward system for attraction and retention of key talent as well. We're actually indicating that based on our situation, we wouldn't just vigorously go filling positions because they exist and we just want to have a situation where all the vacancies have been populated, but rather strategically at this point in time would look for key vacancies on the basis of which the company would actually be more effective and sustainable. So part of what we have done is in terms of the three-year substantive agreement to 2014-17, conditions of service within that agreement are being reviewed to ensure that we operate at a more cost-efficient level within the remuneration space, as well as the various remuneration aspect where we incur maybe at this point in time a situation where we have realized that we have to manage more effectively over time, we have to manage more effectively other costs that are related to the extent to which we have to service the areas where we do business. And
the next few slides, I think without having to repeat ourselves, we talked quite a lot to the regulatory issues when we're dividing the structure. I think the critical issue for us on the slide is the issue of clarity again on the structure of the industry that we'd like to see, because we're fully aware that based on the uptake case and the ruling thereof, we had everyone who was who had a VENS license being given an ECF, ECNS license. That does have an indication on what kind of a structure of an industry would you like to have. We've also had other rulings with regard to deployment of infrastructure in the metro areas. So I do think that whilst we do require clarity, to referring back to what the DM has said, in our preservation of the assets and our endeavors to engage, there's a requirement of certainty as to what the role of broadband infraco is within the broader broadband policy, apart from preserving that which we have and ensuring that the infrastructure that we have works. With regards to the risks associated with that, I think we've also addressed that when the CFO addressed issues pertaining to funding, and then I have addressed the issues pertaining to legislation. With a balance sheet that has got insubordinated loans with no history of debt, it does become very difficult for you to then raise funds. So we do require to have some form of support for us to be able to preserve the asset.
Thank you very much to both the board chairperson, CEO, and the team from BVI. I'm going to open for discussions, questions. Members, we're going to have the first round, and then we're going to have the second round. I want to be upfront about it, Robert McKenzie. And then what I'm going to question members so that we don't have too many things, and then they lose us. So each member, at least, let's have five areas on the first round. It can be five questions, comments, but five. And then we take the first round, and then after they respond, we take the next round. that should be fine, members. Eh? I've noted Honorable McKenzie, I've noted Honorable Keelan, I've noted Honorable Todd, I've noted Honorable... Why am I forgetting my name so much in the morning? And then Honorable Ndogeni, is your hand up, please? Honorable Ndogeni, in that order, members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll accept you limiting my constitutional right to freedom of expression. Chairperson, just a general comment. We're hearing a lot during this round of committee deliberations about the rationalization of state-owned companies, and perhaps this is addressed at you, Honourable Deputy Minister Professor. I think it's very difficult for us as members of Parliament to get an idea of where the state-owned companies are going and what their plans are if we have no idea what the discussions are around the rationalization of these companies and which companies are involved. So, for example, if Broadband Africa, as we've seen lots of speculation in the media, is involved with Telkom or being taken over by Telkom, then clearly the funding that's alluded to by the presenters would not become an issue. So I think it would be very useful perhaps if we started this round of budgetary discussions with an idea of where we're going in terms of rationalization of state-owned companies and which ones were involved. So perhaps you could shine some light on that. Chairperson, that's one. Secondly, specifically in terms of the networks, we had discussions around open access networks, and it appears from what you said that Transnet, Eskom, and Prasa have given you access to their networks. Are there any other companies specifically in the private sector that have assisted you with access to their networks and vice versa? And are you having any discussions along those lines? Your slide on performance at a glance, you listed your rollout of fiber by provinces in the Western Cape, which is close to my heart. My blood is blue. there's a rollout of 1,800 and... Sorry, Chairperson, when my patient did my glasses, she said, I'm going to have to pull back in order to see, and she was quite right. I think it's 1,885 kilometers of fiber. Was a portion of that the Western Cape government's initiative to roll out a broadband? Were you involved in that project through CETA? And is it included in that number? I think that's two, Chairperson. Three. I'm going to have to answer myself now. The important things. Okay, I won't ask that one. In terms of your financial performance, obviously, as we move towards 2021, the further we project into the future, the more variables come into play, and the more, I use this term with caution, irrelevant the figures become. But in terms of your 2015-2016 projections, if you benchmark your projections against your previous projections in terms of your financial performance, would you say those are very realistic projections? Because it's impressive to go from a year-on-year growth of cost of sales of 35% down to 2% is tremendous if you can achieve that. So how realistic is that? Certainly going forward, your numbers are very positive indeed. So if you can just give me an idea of the science you've applied in coming to those figures. Because based on that, if I was a finance or venture capital entrepreneur, you know, I don't know much about monopoly capital, but if I was a venture capitalist and I had a look at those figures going forward, I would be very inclined to invest in this business. And that's why I find your funding challenges difficult to get my head around. And we know that the government drew a big blank line through broadband Infraco funding. In terms of your funding, there was lots of what, but very little how. You would fund, and I think that has made your life very difficult. What am I on now, Chairperson? Thank you, colleague. All right, Chairperson, thank you. I'll save the rest.
Okay. Honorable Keegan?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will have to be very clever with how I approach this. Chair, my first comment
consists of two components. And I trust that you will take this one. The one is that as a new entity signing up to telecommunications, I want to suggest that the department and the minister and the DG today here present should just explain how it sees broadband InfraCo, its role in the rollout of the SA Connect. At this stage, it is not clear, and it creates the impression that it could be regarded as a stepchild in the telecommunication sector. Could we have a better understanding? The second one, that's one. The second one is, I think it is very good, the slide 4 is very valuable, because seeing that all politicians are not necessarily technocrats, sometimes we get very confused with exactly the mandate and how it reflects in the legislation, etc. Because for us to make sure that all these SOEs, or SOCs, whatever we call them, that they fulfill their mandate correctly and don't divert from the main focus, it is very important to just be reminded of what the purpose of every one of those are. All bureaucracies very often sort of adjust, and then they almost start verging into the operations of another. And I think it's important for us, because that makes it difficult for government to give additional funds to these entities. So that perhaps explains and why government was hesitant in the past couple of years, Treasury, because it was important that everyone is understanding exactly what the roles are. I think it was a pity that the new TEL contract was not a profitable one, but that now brings me to the question, with changes in the telecoms industry and with a proposed acquisition of Newtel by Vodacom, how would broadband InfraCo ensure that the unprofitable arrangement that existed with Newtel will not continue going forward? It is heartening to see that they're expanding their clients, but clearly it must be that if they can base their planning going forward and the figures that they have given, it's difficult for us to know exactly what informs those figures years going forward, but will those figures be achieved if they get an interim guarantee from government to the amount stipulated in the presentation before us today? Can we rely on those figures? That is basically what I'm trying to move to. And I must say, Chairperson, I think, just a little comment. If we look, and I think we must commend them for what they have done, in the past financial year between 2013 and 2014, at least the revenue has increased. I think ultimately, Chairperson, it is important for us as a country to make sure that we preserve what has been invested, and that we don't every time change and just delete. It is important for them to invest to make sure that the infrastructure retains its ability to improve the new generation networks, etc., etc. And I think for that reason, we really need a very thorough discussion about the role of broadband infrastructure. But that just brings me back to my original point, and that is it not a stepchild that seeks to belong somewhere, but we haven't included them in the broadband yet? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'm going to start with the corporate plan. Can you explain why every page of the corporate plan is marked confidential? I would like to know the outstanding debts you have. You've got 2 million that's outstanding from something called problems in the yard. Can you explain who they are and why you regard them as doubtful payers? And then we have the Department of Science and Technology owing $147 million. And what steps are being taken to get that money? What is that for? I presume a lot of it was for the network up to Sutherland and SAA. If you could please explain that, because then also somewhere in the line, along the line in your presentation, you referred to a vulnerable Route 7. That's on, well, I can't see it, that's your own slide. At vulnerable Route 7 is to Sutherland, it's 357 Ks of cable. Can you explain why that should be vulnerable? I mean, I don't understand your classification there. Because I presume there's a gain, that's what the SKA salt link, and surely a project like that should not be vulnerable. Then, I'm wanting to know your involvement in the NHI pilot site that the president spoke about in Sinner, in which he said that Tocom was the agency in that, because I see according to yourselves here, you list that as being met the requirements for it, and you list all the sites. Now, my understanding was that that was done by Araka, that they actually put together this data. That's CSR, that might be part of the DSP data, I don't know. Can you please explain that? Who's actually involved? Is it you, is it Telkom? Because the president presentation we had last week from the minister said that Telkom had been chosen in an obviously non-open tender process to be the lead agency for this thing because it had the majority network in the rural areas. Yet your corporate plan says that Telkom's network is mainly in the urban areas and the metros. And you seem to have done this plan here, which I assume where Telkom doesn't exist. So if you could please give us some light on what this deal is, what the plan is, who's actually involved in it, because I'm now, the more I read from entities, the more confused I become. Can we also please, this is about the number of clients you have. Sorry, let me just get to the relevant page. You, in your corporate plan, you say you have 15 clients, okay? In the presentation, you said 17. Now, this corporate plan recognizes Celsius and Theta, so I assumed Celsius and Theta were part of the 15. Okay, so then who are the other two in 17? And that also drives me to slide 7. Is to who is the third anchor customer? You haven't named that anchor customer. If you could please do so, whether that deal has been secured. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Another one. Thank you, Chairperson. From the presentation on the number of connected facilities, the only indicate the actual facilities that's connected, but the actual numbers indicated here are not shown. And we are living in an environment whereby power supply is inconsistent and unreliable. To what extent will this affect your performance? And since 2013-14 financial year, your old percentage for the services rendered. Is there any strategy in as far as the collection is concerned, also handing over those who have defaulted for you to recover your costs? And on effort to raise funds, you know, the exercise on its own has the financial implications. Is there any estimated time frame as to how long will it take you to raise funds? And so far, is there any light in the progress that you are getting there? I'll drop this one out.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. What strategy will BPI use to attract professional engineering services and how many are required? And what is the estimated cost of this exercise as opposed to BPI hiring engineering to build its internal engineering capacity? 2, when is BPI filling the vacancy of the chief financial office position? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I think
to the TPVI, there's quite substantive issues that have been raised. And for me, what is in the core of even us being able to really get into the details that other members have raised is to understand where to from here. We're talking about this financial year. We're supposed to approve annual performance plan. I'm saying this to the PM and to the DG who are here. We are supposed to approve a performance plan, annual performance plan of BI, but we are facing a situation that by August, BI might have to close shop. If there's no money by August, what happens? Because that is fundamental to us. Because in October, we are expecting them to come and tell us in terms of their performances and all those things. We need to know what is it that we are proving here. An entity that is about to close or an entity that is likely to survive. What is the position of the department in relation to the BI status? Because surely I think the department will have reflected. Noting that there's an SOE rationalization, I don't think what PVI is would have to wait for SOE rationalization. It doesn't warrant. There's an emergency. I don't want us to end with another post office colleague where you get calls on the date of payment at the end of August. Employees in DVI says we do not receive our salaries. This is the future of people that we are talking about. This is the future of companies that are doing business with DVI. This is a reputation of the country to the select network that DVI is providing. And I think in light of what has currently happened, we definitely need South Africa to strengthen our relation to the select. We are on a back foot, and we can't afford. So, for me, before I can even go to the plans of finance, the plans of HR, that for me is a periphery, as I said. It's a peripheral issue because I need to know when I'm sitting as a member of parliament expected to approve a plan, a strategic plan. What is it that is going to happen to BI? Because it does not assist us to sit and theorize. We are dealing with a practical situation. Theory would have to sit aside. We have a practical situation that BBI, we must approve the plan. And as parliament, we definitely can't just hold our arms and say, no, we accept that they are closing, in possibility of closing. What are the issues? What are the mitigating factors? I mean, there are things, for example, if you look at the slides where it talks about other funding efforts. AFBD has provided a letter of intent and willingness to fund the institution provided there is a governmental support. What does this mean? Who is governed? Because this is a state institution, 100% owned by government. Why isn't, is there no relation between the department and the entity? If there's still going, if you're coming to the committee today, and this slide is written, if previously there's been an application to Treasury or requests, what were the feedback of Treasury and have we been able to resolve those? Noting it's an inheritance from DPE coming to telecoms. Therefore, meaning what has been that has been done by telecoms immediately when BBI comes into the party. So that's the discussion I would like to know. But again, to the board, is to say, what has been the reflection of the board about the status of this entity? And has the board looked at options? To say, okay, if we do not have the letter from government, if we do not have this, what are our options? What is it that you are recommending? What is it that you are saying to us as MPs? Because as I'm saying, we are expected to approve this, and therefore we need to be clear what we are approving and what we are dealing with.
we need to be able to say to South Africans, this is the future and this is what we intend to do. So those for me, before I can even go to the details of the plans, the shortfalls, the plans of HR, the issues of how they're going to attract skills, how we deal with clients, we must just deal with the status of PBI. And we think this is what we need to do. So I'm not sure who's going to start. TM, I think I'll allow you as a political head to lead in the discussion, and then the DG, and then we'll allow the entity to come.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Chair, I think you have somehow directed our thinking about what is important for now. But maybe I have to try and respond to Honorable Mackenzie's first question. It's really something which we looked at last week, but I suppose as long as the issue is not resolved in our own minds, we have to keep on revisiting it. I just want to emphasize what I said, that the whole idea of rationalization of SOEs came out of a consultative exercise where people from the private sector were trying to assist government in saying, how do we ensure that we make impact within the socio-economic sector, looking at jobs, unemployment, all the issues that South Africa is concerned about, that we seem to be doing everything, but we are not making the progress we want. So a high-level panel of key leaders in the private sector set, of course, they did whatever they did, and they analyzed, and then they advised. One of the things that they noted was that the problem with government, there's so much duplication. I think they came out about 700 SOEs, which sometimes have a common mandate, but they don't talk to each other, and so there's a duplication, there's a wastage, and that tends to have impact on the outcomes that we all desire, which are measurable: poverty, unemployment, inequity. And they came out with this broad concept, which really is up to us to assist in terms of understanding what exactly they meant. They spoke, they said, rationalize them. I don't think their understanding from government side is that get rid of them. It's more about how do we ensure that then there's no wastage, there's no duplication, and it's looking at the alignment. And Telkom then, when it comes to broadband, was seen as one of them with the largest footprint, you know, and the success story around the 2010 World Cup, that then let's work, let's put them there on top, it's a success factor when it comes to broadband. And the question then is, how then do we position broadband rollout within that success story? Of course, there are legitimate questions. If you think government-wise in terms of tender processes and so on, and I don't think we are there. We are in the planning phase of how to respond to what the presidential review committee said, that let's ensure that our SOEs talk to each other, they work in a coordinated fashion. I mean, in this committee, there has been constant reference to the CETA Western Cape government project. In the past, the Western Cape could have gone for anyone outside government. Okay. Let's bring it back. We're in a situation where within our metros, within one province, one metro will choose its partners for broadband and go for another one. And of course, you all know the cost implications of that. Hence,
were all really supporting the idea of rationalization from a point of coordinating our efforts and ensuring that whatever agencies we use, there are ways of reducing the cost for government. So I think during, out of this process, Chairperson, during the budget vote, when we present a budget vote, we'll be in a better position to explain the actual implementation of the Presidential Review Committee. How is it going to work within this context of rationalization? Because otherwise it becomes too risky if we as public representatives don't give ourselves time to debate it and to add value of how we think we should actually implement this recommendation. I just thought it's important to give this broad, to explain how did this rationalization came about. I think the intentions are noble, they are good. Is the practice that we should all manage very carefully so as to make sure that the desired outcomes are realized in terms of impact, effectiveness, efficiency, because those are things that will help us to realize this economic inclusion, which is a big elephant in the house, in the context of South Africa Connect with the given targets in terms of the NDP, that what are expected targets for connectivity by 2020, 2030, and so on. So I just thought, Chairperson, before the DG, so in terms of the questions that have arisen, clearly the rationalization does not talk to elimination. It talks to coordination and streamlining the mandate, because one of the things they said was that some of the SOEs do not have even a clear mandate if the process has been lost and they get, end up competing with each other, and that way again delay the desired outcomes. So maybe the PG will help us a little bit more, Chairperson, with some of the questions that are specific to the department.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe I can just explain, even way before BPI was actually transferred to us, because initially the plan was it should have been transferred to the department, I think it was July, when the proclamation that also transferred CETA, but there were also concerns from DPE that there are certain processes that needed to be observed. That's the rationale why the proclamation on transferring broadband infraco was actually done later than the one that was transferring CETA. But of course, even before then, we were already engaging. And one of the things suggested that actually we faced with from the minute we started engaging on broadband infraco was the application for grantees with national treasury. Literally, that has been the bulk of what actually preoccupied us from the minute that we were interacting on the issues of broadband infraco up to even this year. The initiatives in terms of requesting cash injection or guarantee, unfortunately, were not successful with national treasury. We even had a meeting with the CEO, I think earlier this year, was in February, Sibongile, where we personally gave a feedback in terms of what the feedback is and what our proposal was for that. We needed a company to come up with austerity measures to keep the company afloat in terms of preserving the value. Because it's one thing, Chairperson, to say this is what I want, but we then were saying these are the realities of feedback. What we are requesting is that we needed to come up with cost containment until some of the issues are solved. And this has been opposition. And we've been very transparent with broadband infraco with regard to feedback on what the temperature is from National Treasury. And I think one of the things that we can also appreciate, Chairperson, is that DPE was very transparent about what we inherited. And I think that was that even the Minister of Public Enterprise was very clear to say, Minister, these are the realities of what is coming to your direction. These are the challenges in terms of the engagements that we even had, including even Deputy Minister call when we had the annual general meeting. DPE was also there just to assist us because of some of the challenges that we were facing. But the reality is that the CEO and both the chairperson knows
Minister has made insufficient time to engage the entity on where we are and what are the challenges and the feedback on the funding. And I mean, this is one entity that we do a lot of correspondence besides even meetings, so that there is ear correspondence and recording today. This is what is happening with the entity and Honorable Chairperson. But when we are not getting the necessary funding that is being requested, there's very little that we can do from our side as a department. I think that we really need to be honest and transparent about the situation with regard to the funding request from National Treasury.
I think before we move, there are a number of things that we must clarify. What is the department asking us to do as Parliament? I think let's start there. What are you expecting us to do with this entity? Because you're saying to us, they're really too much. Treasury is not giving the money. So what's the plan? Then what, where to from here? I think that's what I said. Where to from here? Because otherwise it would be a waste of our time to sit here and interrogate an APP of a closing entity. We just want to understand. Or maybe it might mean that we park PBI's APP and all that discussion to next week and ask Minister to come, because we can't process them.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the last interaction that we had with the Chairperson and the CEO, with the Minister, the thinking was exactly what you are saying, that what's the way forward? How would they position broadband Infraco in the context of rationalizing entities, and that they were supposed to come back with a document? I don't know whether the Chairperson was in that meeting, but I remember very well the board member, the chair of? Yeah, okay. The chair of Audit and yes, the chair of Audit and Risk, which is very, very important, attended that meeting. And the request was that within 2 weeks, come back to us, clearly articulating your vision, how you fit in with the priorities in terms of broadband, all the pillars of South African contact policy. Let me just say that. And that's the document we haven't received. So what I'm saying, Chairperson, I don't think we, as a department, we are coming here to say we have taken a position and we are appealing, we are asking that you do not process the presentation of broadband in Fraco. As far as we are concerned, we are in engagement. It's an important asset for us, this SOE, with unique capabilities. It's a question of rationalization. How do they fit in within the scope of our priorities?
And,
thank you, Jefferson. On this one, totally. Deputy Minister, you said that we would decide on broadband for Crow as part of the budget process. Well, this is the budget process. And this was actually scheduled to be our last day on discussing the budget process. But we needed some information right now to decide what we're going to do about broadband info in this budget cycle. You know, so to actually, I mean, broadband info has been on the department's books, as it were, in spirit only for the past, 4 or 5 months. It was left totally, totally out of the budget. There's no money for it. We could see it. We saw it immediately. It wasn't even mentioned in the department's budget. So, you know, really, this, it's sort of, now we're at the critical stage to make a decision. And, you know, this is, I try to work out how much money government has actually invested in broadband infrastructure. I think it's about 2 billion. Yeah. So we've got a 2 billion rand asset that is just suddenly going to poof, vanish. You know, surely by now our decision should have been made on what to do with it.
Another question?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Chairperson. And I agree with every word you said. To add to what my colleague Honorable Shin was saying, That's why my question to you, Deputy Minister, was specifics around the rationalisation process. Because one of the questions I asked the CFO was, I can see lots of how this is where we are in terms of funding, but no how. How you were going to fund that. So as the chairperson said, you sit in an entity that's coming to the end of its life. There's no funding in the budget for it. What are you going to do with it? And Minister, if you are going to give it to Telkom or sell it to Telkom, then we need to know that. But we do need to know a specific, and I agree with the chairperson, before we can approve this business plan, because this committee doesn't just sit to rubber stamp items. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think the rationalization issue created an uncertainty on the part of broadband. But at the same time, the responses we are getting from the department, both the DM and the DG, seems to suggest that they did not, perhaps they don't see the future in BBI in that they have actually left it out of its budget. And therefore, BBI should proceed to finish. And you asked a very specific question. Is there a future? What is the future? Is there any relationship between the entity and the department per se? But it does seem like the department has washed off its hands on BBI, and what is the rationale for us discussing this strategic and for an entity that has already said to us, unless they get funding, they are closing shop. Thank you, Jim.
Honourable Chairman,
Chairperson, thank you. I'm covered. I just want to confirm that page 10 has in fact the investment by government over the 4 years. From 2008 to 2011, which amounts to approximately 2 billion. And I think that is a concern, Jay, that we, and that was also my comments earlier. Thank you, Jay.
This is call of BBI. One is trying to think around, you know, about the project, just a little bit about any other option. One would think about a measure. Maybe the Minister would present if. Mega wouldn't be one of the best options, maybe to Mega Center.
Let me just re-emphasize, colleagues. If the issue of BVI financial challenges was falling outside the financial year, we'd possibly maybe be able to give some space, but it doesn't. We have an obligation based on parliament processes. When we come to the debate, actually our report is going to be adopted on the 12th of May. We are expected to reflect our position per entity in that report. So we are not able to go to that point. We won't be able to unless these questions are asked, because we must reflect and we must be able to say this is our recommendation. Currently we do not get from the department. What is the plan? That's why I'm asking, what is the way forward from here? Because we must reflect on it. And then based on the status, the entity says they have difficulties of finances, they will not be able to survive post-August. Now, this is what the department has said about this entity. And therefore, either we support or we do not support, or we either tend to say we will observe the process. But if there's no clarity, we can, as Parliament, keep the reckless of us as a committee and as members of Parliament to just say that the entity just presented that they are likely to close on August, therefore we notice. It's reckless. They are state assets, but are sitting there that we have an obligation to look after on behalf of South Africans. And maybe and understand them where you are coming from. But the reality of the situation is that where we are sitting here, it seems that the department together with the entity needs to have a conversation and come with unified voice to the committee and say, this are what we are looking at as an option. Initially, when I presented the committee program last week, we had slotted BI to come on the 28th. And we thought because we have this discussion, we might leave them in terms of survival. But it's very clear
but we managed to reinsert that slot. Because I find it difficult as a chair, what is it that is going to be in the report of the committee relating to the PBI, honestly speaking, colleagues. We are not being difficult as a committee, but it's an obligation we have. We have delegated our duties as members of parliament just to ignore this matter. Because as I'm saying, you can't even go to speak about HR matters. That HR planning can only happen if everybody knows where their future is. Colleagues, it's April, towards the end of April. We're talking about 3 months, 4 months. It's not even 6 months. You're talking about people that are involved in that campaign. If they are to start looking for jobs, at least I charge you need about 6 months to find yourself something. I do not want to be asked tomorrow where were you when this happened. Like we were asking where were people when post office collapsed. We are here now. We are asking these questions. And we want clarity. It can be in the next month. It can be in the next 2 months. It has to be within this month. Prior to us going and putting together a report of the entity. We owe it to the public. We owe it to ourselves. That's why, Colleen, and you're pardoning me, members, I hope you understand. These other questions that come are secondary to what we are dealing with. So that for me is a real challenge.
Thank you very much. I just want to clarify the statement that were said by Honorable Soela with regard to that we don't see a future of broadband IFACO and all that. We definitely do see a future of broadband IFACO. I think the issue that we are finding ourselves dealing with is we're in a transitional phase in terms of broadband IFACO as it was established and broadband IFACO post the discussion that we have in the context of rationalization. I think that's the issue that we're dealing with, Chairperson. I mean, as late as last year, this is an issue that we're also engaging with the Minister with regard to ensuring that we move with speed on the rationalization, which is about the proposal that the Deputy Minister was talking about between the two entities, which our view is that this is the area that will help us, and this is how we are envisaging how we will be able to get ourselves out of the situation that we're finding. But it's safe to say that the entity definitely does have a future. We see a future, and this is the issue that we are trying to resolve, both with the Minister and the Deputy Minister, in terms of how to move forward with regard to BI, in terms of its relationship with Telkom in the context of regionalization. So the Minister wants to come in.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson. What I need to add here is, and I think this is an agreement between the department and then PBI, that there's a certain history that has tilted the fate of PBI in a particular fashion. One of the issues when the CEO was presenting here, she alluded to the fact that BBI started out with one customer, which was Newtel. And the terms of that relationship were tilted in favor of Newtel. And so there is a history to the current problems that BBI is facing. So I just wanted to note that as in the first point. But also then, we need to then say, given that, what has been done to try and sort out the problems of BBI? Over the past few years, attempts have been made to get funding from Treasury. And in the last request for funding, which was submitted in the previous MDF, of which the process is part of, BPI submitted a request for slightly more than 2 billion to the National Treasury to say they want to be able to improve their infrastructure, refurbish it and so on. They demonstrated that their infrastructure was getting dilapidated. The response of the National Treasury, Chairperson, was, if we are to consider funding the BBI, we need to then first decide what should be the end stage of this company. Because we can't give money where we are uncertain as to what's the future of the company. And so, that was at the same time as South Africa Connect was being finalized. And so, being a broadband company, a question was also asked, what becomes the role of BBI in South Africa Connect? Now, the question of roles of different entities within the then Department of Communications and outside was a question that could not immediately be resolved within as the South Africa Connect policy was being finalized. Rather, it was then said as part of that, there must be a process of rationalizing the state-owned entity. So the question of rationalization is not only just a question of resolving who's going to play a role within South Africa Connect. It's about trying to say, if we are to implement South Africa Connect, we need to be efficient. We need to ensure that our resources are utilized as most effective as they can possibly be. Now then, that's truly a question. What do you do when you have a number of entities that have capabilities? Some have been, in legislation, have been given an object, have been given as their object, the question of building broadband. How do you then deal with that? You have a number of these around. And try and do that in the most efficient way. And so the question of SOC rationalization tries to answer that question, to say who's going to play what role. But not only to say who's going to play what role, but also understand what sort of capabilities really are needed. What sort of capabilities do they possess which are needed to actually implement broadband, to implement broadband policy. So that's basically been the issue. Now, the process of rationalization, as Gigi was saying, we are still at a much more earlier stage, a more of a stage where he calls it a transition. No final decision has been made, but the question is really on the table is, what sort of preparations are necessary in order for you to be able to conclude this process? And a part of that is what the DJ has alluded to in terms of...
You are not making a presentation.
Yes,
sir. You were given just to explain something.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, comfort.
Right. So I'm just going to this point that then says, the instruction to BBI has been, there is no doubt there's going to be a rationalization of SOC. Whatever form it's going to take, which has not yet been decided. But your task immediately is to go and prepare yourselves. And in preparing yourselves, you need then to do this thing that is said to be. You must now preserve the value of this company. So this is an asset of...
Thank you very much, DJ. I think first...
Thank you, sir.
The minister last week said that the rationalization is going to take 3 years. I'm to my colleagues. That's what the minister said to the commission. So rationalization, let's put it aside. What do you do with the budget? Because we don't have 3 years on BBI. That's what the minister said to the committee. And actually the minister misled the committee. But what the minister presented to us is that rationalization is going to take 3 years. BBI has until August. So rationalization steps aside. But another issue which, with due respect to you, the issue of SA Connect in the initial case, BBI was never invited. The issue of the discussion on ICT policy review, BBI was not invited. This is what came in last year's meetings, when we had meetings on these discussions. Rice Coalition, remember, it has been here. And it was very clear that this process is where they started. PBI was nowhere. That was the meeting that took place, I think, in September last year, in the committee, where we dealt with issues of what went roll out and issues of EthiConnect. We had the teams. So we know the initial stage of what happened. Now, BBI is being included once it has been transferred. And for us as members of parliament, is that we are dealing with an oversight over the executive. How the executive arranges his business is none of our business. Maybe let me just be back there, so that colleagues can understand when you deal with parliament. That's why I can never say to colleagues that I was not here, I was a communications committee. I go to communications committee meetings and find what has been presented. I go to public service committee and find about it, because this is what parliament has expressed itself as an institution. So when the executive expresses itself as an institution, it's immaterial where entity is sitting. And our colleagues will take that into consideration when interacting with the committee. When it comes from DPE and all those, and I liked what DPE said, that from DPE, they were there on handover process and engagement to make sure that there's an understanding of the issues. Now, when we inherited a department last year before October, and there were emergency matters, now it's April. You've not dealt with them. Where I'm sitting, because you don't have a concluding issue. Because for me, if you know that this process is about tabling a plan of a year, and there's an indication that the entity might not survive a year, this surely should have been a discussion that happened between the department and entity to say, in this period, this is where we are, this is what. And surely preparations before coming to committee should have been done to say, we are going to the committee, this is what we say. And my frustration is that we are dealing with an annual performance plan that goes beyond August. In this plan, we are supposed to approve things that deals with November, October, January. If you were saying to us, approve what goes until August, that would be comfortable. I cannot approve anything, or this committee cannot approve anything that speaks to September, October, November, December, January, February, March, and 2017. So, that's why I said, where do from here? Our question is very simple, colleagues. Those months, what do we do with them? What is it that you are expecting us to do? And a simple thing, maybe. And that's why I was thinking that, that's why my initial comments, because perhaps maybe we're putting you in a corner, you might have to caucus back and come with a unified approach that we give to Parliament. Because remember, based on the land bill, colleagues, we have the authority to amend your budget. Where you are leaving us, you are putting us in a very tight corner, because we can decide to amend a particular budget and say we are redirecting it to support BDI. It's a very, very difficult position you're putting us in. But again, money bill says to us as members of parliament that we cannot approve an APP that has questions around the funding. So you can't approve an unfunded mandate. You are requesting us to approve unfunded mandate on corporate plan of and annual performance plan of PI. That's what it is. And it's against our procedure, it's against the law. We are not being difficult, colleagues. We are following the law. What we are expected to do. So there are 5 months that I need to know how is that month, those months going to be funded before we can agree. Otherwise it becomes us approving unfunded mandates. Or ways for the UK. I think the chairperson of PBI wants to speak. Let me give it to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, my attempt is to assist the House in contextualizing the problem. I am 100% in agreement with you, and this is what I have, as at last, with the other shareholder, the IDC, discussed. It's not so much what the department wants to do going forward. The issue is what and how are we going to be assisted within these 5 months. If we start having going concern issues, we are closing our books, I think, end of May. We will a qualified audit, which we have never had before. And the simple reason for the qualified audit will be projecting 12 months going forward, they're not a going concern. The extent of money required to resolve that is nothing more than 300 million rand. If anybody wishes to proceed with a particular policy directive, whether we merge or whether we do anything, the critical aspect, as you raised it, is to deal with the 5 to 12 month situation. When last we met with the minister, I think, unless we're not understood, but that was the sum total of the message. And I also wanted to say to you, you raised the issue of what the board has been doing. As a board, since 2012, we drew attention to the financial situation of the company. Actually, it is a result of a drop in revenue of about 45% when the Neotel contract came into an end. We have, as executives have shown, increased the number of customers. There is a likelihood that we may increase it in the next 3 months to back to what it was when Neotel was a customer. But that, for current discussion, is neither here nor there. The issue is in the short interim period, what are we going to be assisted with? Thank you.
Well, if I'm going to call 10 minutes comfort break, and then we come back.
Thank you.